On the line from Canada, British Columbia, we have Paula Thorncroft. And Paula, you're a unique person in many ways. You have a video of you being abducted, or at least the craft that came towards you. Is that right? Welcome to the show, by the way.
Okay.
Now how exactly did this happen? This come about that you'd have a video camera handy?
It was actually perhaps about a week before I taped that sighting. That we were up fishing up in at a lake, Grayback Lake, out of the Okanagan here, and a white orb, I guess you would call it, came up and flew beside our truck as we were leaving the lake at about 10:30 p.m. The sun had just gone down, and this orb was beside us for a couple minutes, keeping pace with our vehicle, and I felt at that time that I needed to make sure that I had some extra tapes and to keep my video camera handy, and it was the July 1st, right after the fireworks and driving home, that when we were with our children, that I noticed this light that was very bright and very low in our sky just over our house. So I determined that after we had put the children to bed, I would go out and take a look at it. And that's what I saw.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive what you took. You know, there's more to this than just what we mentioned, because you've written a book, right?
Yes. I'd actually have been having sightings and contact with different beings that I remember from when I was 17. For obvious reasons, I mean, when your first experience happens to you, for myself, I didn't believe that it was perhaps even reality until about the second, third experience, and then after which I saw a ship or a craft during the day, which was quite large. We were only maybe about 50 feet away from it, and I knew then that this was really happening. But at the same time, I had no way to understand or to know that it would continue on over 10 years, you know, thinking that, you know, perhaps the, you know, I hadn't had contact for years, so there was no reason to think I would see anything again or whatnot. And so it wasn't until I hit about 28 that I decided I needed to write down the experiences I had seen.
So before this last thing with the video, that happened this year or last year?
That just happened in July here.
Oh, okay, right, July 1st this year. So, I mean, you had already started writing things, I take it, before that?
I was actually almost finished the story. Or my account, what ended up happening was while I was writing the account, of course, I started feeling a little bit braver and decided, you know, I wanted to talk to some other professionals and to find out about others like me and what their experiences had been. When I tried to contact some different organizations and that sort of thing, I found that there was just a lot of difficulty even to be able to speak to anyone, and I never was able to.
You never really found a fellow experiencer.
Exactly. And there seemed to be a lot of, you would normally think, you know, this is a strange topic or that sort of thing, but the amount of disbelief, and, I mean, it wasn't like I was coming to them, I think, for myself with any kind of crazy claims, but the amount of disbelief and not being open to it is what led me to believe that perhaps a lot of people like me had experienced this, and until more people put their names behind things and submit the pictures they've taken and document what is happening with them, then our consciousness will not be able to change, and we won't be able to accept it.
Now, we talked to the publisher, and they're moving your date up to get it out, because they're really quite taken with it. And that's how we learned about you, was PR people talking to PR people, and then they talked to us. The thing that I guess I really want to ask right off the bat is, were these experiences horrible, nice, wonderful, neutral, a little of all? What? How would you classify your abduction experiences?
I would say that, I mean, I would say they're a shock to our system and our psyche, because it seems to me that when we are perhaps with these other beings, we're not, we're in like a drugged state. So that can be a shock to yourself, not to be able to have full ability to move around, to speak, to get away or to flee. So in that way, for my first experiences that I had, the very first one was a positive experience, with a golden bean, who was very nice and seemed to be very kind.
Male or female? Or could you tell?
He did not have, there was no indication, physical indication of sex on his person. He was not wearing any clothes or that sort of thing, but I heard his voice. He was moving his hands over the top half of my chest, and he got to the right side, or on the right side of my chest. I didn't see his mouth move, but I heard a voice in my mind say, "A lump, it's hard here."
Could you feel his touch?
Yes, very gently, yes.
And did it feel magical or human, or?
No, it just felt like somebody was very gently moving their fingers, just very gently sliding. And he was so...
And why did he say he was doing this?
The feeling that I got was it was some sort of like a checkup or okay. scan or some mm-hmm. examination. Because when I heard the voice say, "A lump, it's hard here," and then it said cancer, and I immediately thought in my mind at the same time I pictured our little family weight bench at home and thought, no, I've been working out. And then the being just looked at me and it was smiling. And yeah, so it... I wouldn't say that he had a magical touch or anything, but just he was intent on what he was doing, like as if it was a scan.
And now you this was almost like a golden god of folklore.
I don't know. He looked, the head was a little bit what people typically, I guess, say the grays to be. The head was, he had a very large, wide head. The eyes were like a chocolate brown.
Oh, really?
Pardon?
Yeah, that's interesting what you said. Yeah, tell me a little bit more about that, what he looked like.
Very long, thin arms and long, thin legs. He would have had to have been a couple inches of my own height, so I would say that this being appeared to be over 5 feet tall. There was no hair on the body. There was a glow that seemed to be around him, as if his energy, as if his skin was illuminated. It was very golden.
So kind of like a energy field.
Yes, yes. And just seemed very peaceful, very soothing.
You know, you call this, in mystical terms, an aura, I guess. Was it a certain color, this reflection, Randy?
Just light.
Okay.
The glow from his skin, mm-hmm. to even light up the area just off his skin a little bit brighter, you know?
And where did this take place?
This took place in, when I woke to found myself there, I was laying on a narrow... hard table type thing. It wasn't like a bed, but I was in a room that appeared that the walls, I'm not sure of the floor because I couldn't see it where I was lying, but the walls were all, appeared to be an organic or, I don't know, perhaps living or some type of material that actually had a bit of movement in it. They were the color of like a pink, almost peach color, and there appeared to almost be like as if it was pliable. And like I said, there was almost like a slight movement, as well as a tiny bit of a perceptible breeze that was happening. And I, in my state, I never questioned. I just felt very, very peaceful and very relaxed in that situation.
Were there others there?
No, not that I'm not.
And had you been asleep when this had happened?
Yeah.
And originally, you just kind of chalked it up as a dream.
Yes, except for the fact that what I saw and what I remembered felt so incredibly real. But it would be another year before I would have another contact experience like that.
Same type of contact?
No.
What was that one like?
That one was after the experience with the golden bean. Before that, I'm not. I believe the only thing I can think of in my memory is that I have possibly been seeing these orbs since I was a child, as I'd noticed them low in the sky before and remember those memories. But before the golden bean, I had not seen any ships or had my own sightings or that sort of thing. After I saw this bean, I started being made aware of different silver type dish shapes that would reflect sunlight and catch my attention over the course of a year. At 18, I ended up moving in with a friend of mine, and when I came home one night, she was upset, and she told me that she was hearing somebody in her bedroom going through her boxes or whatnot. And she had asked me if I had been hearing this, because she said it started shortly after I moved in. My bedroom was in the basement, surrounded by cement, so I didn't hear much there, and told her that no, I hadn't heard anything. Now, at this time, as she was saying this, she started to hear this noise again and put her finger to her lips and motioned upstairs to her bedroom, which was directly above us in the dining room. So I crept across the floor in my socks and went up the stairs and went in up to the top floor, and I could clearly see this box had been opened. There were papers sticking out, whatnot. It was a very thick feeling of energy. It was really highly charged, and I was afraid but determined not to be afraid. And so I saw nobody was in the bedroom. I looked into the bathroom. There was no one there. And as I turned and saw my reflection in the mirror, I heard these three bell tones that sound like just a bing kind of sound that, or more like, I guess, a donging kind of sound that elevators use sometimes to announce the floor. And at that time, I became incredibly tired, almost to the point of hunching right over, and at which point I got very afraid and started to run from the bathroom. I ran downstairs and found my roommate crouched over the table and proceeded to shake her awake and say, you know, there was nothing there. Now, that night, she asked me, because she was afraid, if I would please come and sleep up in her room, as there was a whole floor that separated us. And so I agreed to, and she went to sleep, and I told her, you know, I'll read a book for a bit, and then I'll fall asleep as well. So anyway, she was sleeping on the right side of the bed, and I was on the left side of the bed. I read the romance paper book or whatnot for about an hour, and then I put it on the night table beside me, turned off the light, and looked up at the ceiling, and then closed my eyes. The minute I closed my eyes, there was a sound that flooded my body, and I could not open my eyes. I could not move my hands or my legs. And the sound felt like it permeated right into the depths of me. And because it was a very loud, powerful, like a droning engine or a motor type sound, for how powerful the vibration of it was. And I started to fear that the sound, because of the pain that it was causing inside my brain and inside my chest area, that I was going to be killed by the sound. So I fought as hard as I could, and I got my eyes to open. As soon as I opened my eyes, there was nothing there. And I was, you know, concerned, and but at the same time, after about 20 minutes, I determined, you know, you can't stay up all night. So I closed my eyes again, and as soon as I closed my eyes the second time, again the sound hit me. And I believe I must have been too tired from fighting it the first time, and so I was unable to open my eyes again. The pressure and the intensity of the sound got worse and worse, and I felt sicker until I felt myself moving, sliding to the left. And I thought, I'll be okay. I'm going to hit my roommate. She'll fall out of the bed and wake me up, and I'll be all right. But I didn't hit the roommate. I ended up, instead of what I could see behind my eyes at that point, was only blackness. The blackness turned to gray. The sound of this roaring motor-type sound, which was very low, low sound. I don't want people to think it was high-pitched, because it was a very intensely low-pitched sound. Anyways, the sound was replaced by the sound of like rushing wind and freezing air. And immediately, I believe I started to hyperventilate. My breath came faster. This was in the Caribou, and it would have been about minus 15 during about the March month, or March when this had happened. My eyes cleared from the gray, and the first thing I saw was our duplex and our trees over my left shoulder below me. I heard a voice in my head tell me to slow down my breathing, that I would be all right. And I could feel a pulling sensation in front of me. I turned my head to look in front of me, and there was a small, dark being that would have, he appeared to be black until you saw his skin closer, but he was pulling me up into the sky. And so I started trying to pull my shirt off of his hand that he had it clenched in. At that time, not really understanding what was going on, I thought that if I could get his hand off me, that I might float back down to the ground and be okay. But as I got his hand off me, he turned around. I like slowed down a tiny bit, and he turned around, grabbed my shirt again, and started pulling me even faster into the sky. At which point, I became very frantic and very afraid, and I was very, very cold. And I remembered something a friend of ours had told us a long time ago, or told myself, that if I ever found myself, if I should find myself in my astral body or in trouble anywhere, he said, and you don't know what to do, call on Jesus. He will help you. So at this point, this is exactly what I did. And I started calling out my mind, you know, please help me, please save me. And this being turned around towards me, and he said, save you, I'm trying to help you. And then at that moment, he called me this name, and his eyes opened very bright.
He called you, I'm sorry to interrupt you, called you by your name or a name?
he actually, I know, and this sounds silly because I haven't found it yet. He called me a name that I don't remember the entire name. It was a long name, but it, I knew at the time, and I don't know how I know this, but other than just that's the way it was directed towards me. But it's a name that begins with a P, and I have the understanding that it is an ancient derogatory term used for humans. It was a mean name, what he called.
So, in other words, he didn't like the idea of you asking Jesus for help.
No.
And
right at that moment, he said, "Help you, I'm trying to save you, you," and he called me this name that begins with the letter P, but like I said, I know it's a term for humans. And then his eyes opened very bright, like very wide, and there was a flash of light. The last thing I saw was his eyes open wide. And then I was sitting cross-legged on top of our bed, and my roommate was still sleeping beside us. And there was a lot of, I could see a lot of, like, dark energy or movement all around, and I was very terrified. So I thanked God or Jesus for rescuing me, and I prayed that they would keep me safe for the rest of that night. And it took me probably about 40 minutes. I saw this light energy all around me, and it took me about 40 minutes of watching this light that seemed to be moving and shifting and not allowing this very dark mass to come close to the bed. And after a while, I became tired. I fell asleep and woke up the next morning.
And your roommate did not know anything?
No. Nor did I tell her about it.
You didn't tell her?
No.
How come?
Because
she was already afraid?
Yes, and also because of the fact that she had been my friend at that point perhaps for a year. She'd never in her own, you know, in the course of being a friend, mentioned anything to do with ghosts or UFOs or anything, you know, ESP, this type of thing. So I believed that to say anything, and especially at that time, like that was only the second physical event that I experienced, I didn't have answers for what was going on.
Now, in the book, you go into great detail about all of these, I'm sure.
I try to keep it as concise as possible because I want people just to understand or you know.
How many physical experiences do you think you've had?
I've probably had dozens of them, but for the ones that I completely and solely remember, it was probably about 12 or so.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a lot. You're not that old.
Well, it's been happening since I was, like I said, for sure know that I was.
Yeah, I understand that. After all these experiences, have you come to some sort of conclusion about who they are, what they are, why you?
Yeah, I think that this is, I believe, Jerry, that this is probably happening to a lot of people, and that what I have been told is, and repeatedly over the course of years, is that our worlds are merging, we will work together in the future, and that in the future all races will be, or all species will be accepted and work together. And they said that this is the beginning of that time.
And the entities have told you this?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And any of them ever speak, or is it always mental telepathy?
That's a good one. I guess it would have to, that is hard.
Or you're just not sure.
Yeah, exactly, because you don't, when, the, certain times I don't see their mouth move when I hear these words, I guess, and then there's other times that I've had, communications from entities that have just simply come and woken me up and told me something, but didn't have necessarily even a face.
What do they normally tell you? I mean, is it things about your personal life or about the events on Earth? Or
that's where I think that they're very basic. Like at first, I remember when I was first told that they told me before that we're related, that we are like cousins to them, that again too, like that we would work together in the future. And I didn't take this to mean that, you know, just me, or I understood that there would be, like, in the future there'll be trade or there'll be commerce or there'll be there'll just be relationships that are established with many of these different species. And I think that's the thing too, is that there is more than one, you know, definite, you know, there could be perhaps, I don't know, hundreds of different species that are out there. But it seems to me that there could be some difficulties they want us to understand, like, I mean, that not to be afraid of them and to move forward with this, because we, I think we're bombarded with so many negative, so much negative imagery.
You, Paula, you are taking most of this or all of it as a positive experience? As far as you know, nothing evil has happened to you at all?
Yes, and well, for instance, just recently learning about what people, I did not know in my past that people commonly thought that Men in Black existed. I had no idea of them before the Hollywood movie, which I thought was a Hollywood movie. And the thing is that yes, there, you know, there are definitely some entities that I think, you know, it is perhaps their job how do I put this?
So basically, you're saying that these entities are tampering with human beings around the world.
I believe so.
And do you, when you took a picture of this craft, you took this picture and you immediately remembered that it's the same type of craft that it had come to get you?
Well, when the thing is with this particular ship, this particular ship looks very much like a star. Only if you have good eyesight, you would be able to tell the star is about 500 feet in elevation and nowhere near out of our atmosphere. When I was 6 years old, I specifically remember seeing these stars and having a connection where, this is my child mind, obviously, thinking that these stars had to do with, like, the star of Jesus. And I remember watching this one star when I was six moving, and telling my mom that I watched this star moving, and was that showing us where Jesus was? And my mother had said, oh no, you're not watching a star moving. But what I had recently just found out, because of course a lot of my family wasn't aware that I've been documenting this type of thing, and so when I had this tape, I actually showed an aunt of mine who told me that the place where I was living at the time when I was six actually had all these different sightings go on, to the point where scientists camped out in these fields near Dudney Mountain down on the lower mainland in BC there, and camped out there for 2 weeks. She said that what they were filming and what they were seeing was exactly like what I have on my tape. And so that led me to believe that perhaps there's more there. And I mean, I know for myself, I've had dozens of experiences where I only have a memory of either going into the craft or coming out of the craft. And I don't have the memories of what maybe took place there, other than the fact that I never was afraid of it or wasn't upset, and that I seemed to regard them as my friends. And so I didn't.
You've mentioned religion a couple of times here. You look upon this as somewhat of a religious experience, I take it.
No, but the thing that is interesting is the fact that it seems like all entities are working towards a common goal or a common purpose, which would be our own evolution. What we commonly, I mean, how do I say this? There was even with these beings, for instance, there's been experiences I've had where they should have known what was going on, and they obviously didn't, or these other situations wouldn't have been able to happen.
When you say they should have known something was going on, what do you mean? About current events or something?
Yeah, for instance, there was the third major experience that I had, which was a month following that black being. I would end up waking up four times, or gaining consciousness four times on board with these beings. The very last time that I would gain consciousness, a little being would come to see me, and he was a juvenile gray. Now, he wasn't allowed to see me. I saw this conversation as he stood in the doorway. He looked at me, and I immediately saw this flash of him walking up to somebody that was a little bit taller than him, and I felt like it was his boss. He had asked the boss, he wanted to see this girl or this human that was coming, like he knew that I was going to be there, and he wanted to be able to see me for himself. The entity that was above him then told him that no, he wasn't allowed to yet. And that he, you know, and it was understood that he would in the future sometime, but he wasn't allowed to now. So what he determined was he knew where I would be, so he would come and see me. Now the thing was that all the experiences on this boat would end up, or boat, ship.
Well, they're similar.
yeah, would end up giving me like post-traumatic stress for years afterwards. And had it not been for the little gray that snuck in to look at me, I would not have been able to gain the sense of compassion and humanity from it that I needed to really keep my sanity from the point of not being completely afraid at that time. Because at that time, again, I ended up coming back with some physical marks on my body, and I was very afraid.
Well, what, do you remember what they were doing to you physically?
I write about it. I can't say that I know definitively what.
Yeah, but it's in the book.
Yeah, yeah. They made different cuts on my body. I don't know what the purpose or the meaning of that was at that time, or if I do know, I'm not consciously aware.
Do you still have those scars?
No, I don't have those scars. Those scars were actually very. It was actually interesting too, and that's another interesting thing where it seems that there's a lot of divine timing in things that put certain people at the right place in the right time to help verify or go, you know, whoa, what is going on? But my boyfriend at the time, when I came back from that experience, was a fabricator and a welder, and the cuts that were inflicted on my body, now one was right between the middle of right in the middle of my chest, and the other two were on my back. One was about a 12-inch kind of V-flap incision, and another one was down on the back of my shoulder, but kind of mid-torso. He determined that there was no way that I could have made these cuts in the night by myself, but the other thing was that he said they were perfect cuts, that there was a perfect line of blood, and that they looked as if they had been healing for days.
And you don't remember what kind of instruments they used or anything like that?
Yes, so when I first came to consciousness, the very first time I came to consciousness, there was a human-type being that he was the one that I guess was responsible for waking me up, because I heard his voice telling me to remember the hand. This was really happening, remember the hand. And I looked down, and I saw a gray four-fingered hand holding a little knife in his hand, and it was silver.
Hmm. You have any, you know, a lot of abduction stories, they seem to think there might be some sort of procreation involved. You don't remember anything like that at all?
I did have an experience where, how to put this, I had a couple of experiences where I had been pregnant and where mysteriously a baby went missing out of the egg sac, where there was on, and this is actually not in the book, because I didn't want to speculate on things that I don't have a lot of memory of. I know that this physically happened because, you know, I was pregnant. They took the ultrasound. The baby made it to 3.5 months, and then I started to have problems, so they sent me in for another ultrasound, of which they discovered there was no baby. So there are certain things that have happened in that way, but I have never...
And you didn't write about this?
No.
Okay. I was just curious.
Yeah.
So basically, when we're talking about your book, you tried as hard as possible to make it as factual and upfront as possible.
Yes, yeah. And I tried to definitely like steer away from as much any telepathic communication and just keep it, you know, as much to the hard facts as I could within this subject.
Well, did you, in this conversation with your family, did it ever come up that other people had experiences like you?
The one nice thing is that quite a few of my younger sightings in my early years, of course, being still at home then, happened and took place with sisters, friends, relatives, that sort of thing. We had a game where we would chase the little orange orbs in our cars. And at that time, I was the only person that I knew of that had possibly been in contact, so I never let on to anybody else, you know, that I was a little bit afraid of what we were doing, but I thought if everybody thought it was fun, it would be good. So in that aspect, they have seen things. I have one cousin who says that he has been in contact, but there again, when he first told his mother, nobody believed him at all.
Okay, let's talk about contact here for a minute, Paula. Who are these people contacting? Where are they from?
I don't know where they're...
They've never bothered to say, "Hi, I'm Org from Alpha Centauri." Nothing like that.
And that's, I was actually with another interview. That was, you know, part of my problem was the fact that when this first started happening, I had to deal with a lot of fear. And there was actually a person that I dated in university who did have an experience after, like, we had an experience of a sighting here, and this person worked out in the remote wilderness on the west coast of Vancouver Island by himself on contract. And he ended up having an experience where he asked some questions and he did get answers. I myself had spent about 10 years getting over the fear part because it seemed that every time I would wake in the company of them, I would start suffering from post-traumatic stress. It would be hard for me to breathe. I would be very shaky. I'd be immediately afraid instead of being okay with it. It actually hasn't been until the very last time that I've been with them that I wasn't afraid at all, and I finally felt like, hey, I've grown.
did they tell your boyfriend at the time?
These beings told him that they were from a moon or a star that is orbiting the planet Sirius, I believe, and this is written down in the account as well. There's
okay.
An entire chapter that covers his experience.
Well, good. That'll be something for people to read. They're always interested in that. When we're almost out of time, but there's still a couple of things I want to ask you, and the one thing that really I'm very curious about is this last sighting happened July of 2006, and you took a picture of the craft.
I filmed over half an hour of film from two consecutive nights and two different sightings, of which the second night, the same craft showed up at 11 o'clock with multiple crafts with it.
Do you have any idea why they became visible for you to photograph, or do you think they knew?
I think so. I think they know.
Are you supposed to be giving a message? Is that the reason you wrote the book?
The reason why I wrote the book was that the reason why I first wrote down the story was just for the blind fear of the fact, what if I should walk across the road tomorrow, get hit by a bus, no one would ever know. What a disappointment.
Well, I hope that doesn't happen to you, Paul. in the part of the neighborhood in British Columbia you live in, there's probably not a lot of buses. But
well, actually, I have a bus stop right outside the house.
Oh, okay.
But the point was that I had to deal with the fact of my own mortality. I always believed, Jerry, since when I first started having these experiences, that perhaps sometime in the future it would be okay, you know, that things would change, that, you know, everybody would be experiencing this, and eventually it would be different, and you could talk about it, and it would be normal. But after 10, 12 years, there was nothing. I hadn't even heard of the Disclosure Project until just weeks ago, which, again, I'm so very thankful to hear about, because it really gives me hope that this is exactly where we're going. So when I started to write, I didn't know that I was going to publish it or even attempt to have it published. I just wanted the record of it in my own books instead of having, you know, a whole bunch of loose leaf papers and journals and sketches and this sort of thing. But afterwards, after seeing how little support or how many people are really not coming forward, I thought that I would like to put my name behind this and say, hey, you know, because I know beyond a fact, you know, what is going on or that this is happening to me. I filmed two orbs last year coming out of Summerland, but it's nowhere near as impressive as what I had filmed this time. And I do believe that, yes, they knew that I was going to film them. I believe they were, you know, pushing me, you know, get your camera ready. And I've been definitely praying, you know, my whole life that if I should have to see and experience these things, please bless me with the ability to bring some proof. You know.
Well, that's an admirable idea, and you seem to really have developed yourself into maybe a messenger for something we need to know about.
Well, yeah, I'd just like to continue to study and to document. You know, I really would like to continue learning for the rest of my life and see where this takes us. You know, it seems to be a lot of information and a lot of advancement that is potentially coming our way.
Okay, this thing happened in the summer. You're up in a part of the world where it does get cold, like you said, 15 below in March.
Well, that was up north, though, in the Caribou region.
Okay.
It's very cold. The ocean is our California for Canada.
Okay, now, are they more frequent in the summer than the winter as far as contact?
You know, and that's a thing, too, that I've tried to look at over years, is trying to chart to see if there is a pattern between the physical contact and that. I would say that it seems that I see them more in the warmer months, but I don't know, but that could very well be because I'm outside more.
Yeah, we've talked about that many times on our shows. And
yeah, I would really have to say that I just really think they're pretty much around almost all the time. And
I mean, they don't wear coats or or bikinis, so the weather doesn't really affect them.
Yeah, apparently they must have heating in those little sheds.
Yeah. Paula, anything else you'd like to add? The book will be out very shortly. We urge people to get it.
Yeah, if anybody's interested in seeing some pictures, there's a whole bunch of pictures posted at the website, and it should give them a rough idea of what I captured.
Yeah, and we have a link to that website.
Yeah. Oh, excellent. Well, thank you for having me, and it was...
Oh, well, it's a pleasure, and you stay in touch.
Oh, for sure.
Okay, and I tell you what, maybe you need to think about organizing a meeting or a convention of experiencers.
You know, it's funny that you said that, because I was just saying the other day how wonderful it would be if there was a convention of contactees where different people could just share their stories.
Well, maybe it's meant for you to be the promoter. If you do that, you get in contact with us. We'll help you publicize.
Well, for sure. I'd definitely be all for anything that's going to, you know, help bring more support to other people, because it is a very, very lonely process.
Thank you very much, Paula.
Thank you, Jerry. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.